Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Tuesday, November 26, 2013. As usual lately, it's just after 3 UTC as we're recording this. That's just after 7 o'clock Pacific time and just after 10 o'clock Eastern time on the 25th.
Yes.
See, I'm more complete. I'm giving more time zones. Next time I'll tell what time it is in Jakarta as well, you know,
or yeah!
Pick some other random cities around the world as, you know. Yvonne and I are here. We've got, we once again have a fairly light week in terms of numbers of things to talk about, although we've got some fairly significant ones. And I think we've got, obviously there have been developments in Iran. The nuclear option was used in the Senate on the filibuster, at least partial nuke. And then Yvonne noted that we didn't mention the hurricane in the Philippines, so we'll talk about that a little bit, I guess. And we really couldn't think of much else. I mean, I don't know. There's stuff going on, but nothing that struck my fancy anyway. And I've been busy. Obviously, I tweeted a bunch about the Doctor Who 50th anniversary. I was just geeking out about that for a while. It was fun. We all went out. We saw it. It was good.
Well, here's the thing. I guess I had a question about that. I mean, it was on TV. Were there events where you could see it too? Was that where you went?
Yes. So here's the thing. So here's what they did, which I think is like was pretty cool. So first of all, the television one was a live simulcast everywhere in the world at the same time.
Okay.
So it was on at 7:30 p.m., you know, in London.
London.
It was on at 2-something in the afternoon in on the east coast of the U.S. It was on at 11:50 in the morning here in the Pacific time. If you happened to be in Australia, depending on what part of Australia, it was between 3 and 6 in the morning. And so, you know, that was cool. It was like global simulcast. So it wasn't this usual thing where some places get it before others and then there's spoilers all over the internet and all this kind of stuff. They kept most of the stuff secret before it came out. A couple little things leaked out, but they mostly it was fairly easy to keep spoiler free. And you went and everybody was seeing it at the same time on television. But yes, they also had it in theaters. So it was in movie theaters all over the world as well. Limited release, so it wasn't in every city, but those theaters also did it as a simulcast at the exact same moment it was on TV.
Okay.
So yeah, we went to a theater. The Seattle area had one theater showing it on 6 screens, and it was at first one screen. And what they did was every time a screen sold out, they opened up another screen, and it ended up being on 6 screens for the Seattle area.
Okay, I gotcha.
And then I guess they're also, it is being, it's back in the theaters again. Was it yesterday? Today? I don't know. It's also doing another run in the theater, not live. Just a single day special event, but at a lot more theaters. So, like, it was only selected cities, selected theaters. It's going to be at all kinds of theaters for a one-day run. By the time people listen to this, it'll already have happened if it hasn't already, by the time we're recording it. So, anyway, it was apparently very successful, had, you know, high viewership all over the world, both live and in the theater. It was in the UK, it was the third grossing movie of the weekend, despite the fact that there was only one showing, and it was competing against movies that were on all weekend, you know, so, you know, it did good, and it was fun. It was fun. So, you know, yeah, and there are little complaints here and there. And, of course, if you go online, there are people bitching about all kinds of things. And, you know, that's the way things are. But, you know, it was fun. I enjoyed it. We had fun.
And,
you know, there are lots of people dressed up and stuff. We didn't dress up. But there were lots of people in costume and all that.
That's good. Well,
so,
I had a...
Yeah, and of course, we've got the Thanksgiving holiday coming up. I don't know. Nothing too special here. Usual dinner thing. I don't know. Anything else exciting going on in your life before we should talk about real subjects?
No, not really. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, no, nothing particular last week. I didn't even work. Oh, gosh. I didn't even work today. But I woke up, as you can see by my yawning at this hour, my son woke up quite early. So I spent the whole day with him and stuff, and, you know, we actually are looking at a school Okay. Yep. Not because he's enrolling now, but looking at places
to Harvard, where he could. Yale?
Yeah. Yeah, already. Yeah, already sending out the apps. Yep. I'm like, freaking schools, they're all expensive. Fuck.
Yeah. Jesus. Oh, well, and Alex started at his new one today. Mixed report, like, it's stressful being the new day and a first thing. We picked him up and he was doing that whole, like, pretending to be a baby or a dog or whatever. And we got, like, a report back, saying, have you considered, like, having him, we offer this free screening for, like, speech stuff. We think you should do it. And of course, like, the first 2 hours after we got him, he didn't say a single damn word. When he did say something, it was like, because he was like all pretending to be a baby and doing all this stuff. And I'm like, come on, did you do this all day? You could talk. We know you could talk. You have complicated conversations and use big words.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this? Your first day at the new school. And they think you can't talk.
Talk. Anyway. Oh, jeez, that was funny. Okay, yeah. Well, they'll think, get over it, start talking. Jesus.
Exactly. Christ. But anyway. So, shall we talk about real stuff?
Yes.
Okay. Well, to keep our 4-segment thingy, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the real stuff. The real stuff. Here we go.
The real stuff.
Yeah, and just to point out, this segment, only 7 minutes.
Let's see if we can keep on
track. Of course,
track.
It was 7 minutes talking about absolutely nothing.
Well, I don't know. It's like, what are you talking about? We're starting to be like Seinfeld?
Something like that. We'll be back after this. Okay, here we are. So, first real topic. You want to hit Hurricane Iran or filibuster first?
Oh, gosh. Let's go with the filibuster first.
Filibuster! Okay, so, bottom line. It has been talked about literally for years and years and years and years.
It's been a long time. Yep.
This nuclear option existed where basically the majority party...
The what? The new what?
Nuclear.
Ah, okay.
And I reserve the right to say nuclear whenever I feel like it.
Am I talking to Mr. Bush on the other line? I'm like, you went nuclear for a second, but it's
nuclear,
okay.
I reserve the right to say nuclear, whatever I feel like. Damn okay. It. Atomic.
There you go.
The atomic even option. What can I say? I was raised a Southerner. It's been talked about literally for decades, but with having the majority party basically able to change the rules with a majority vote. So the rules of the Senate forever have been, it took 60 votes to close debate on an issue. And so the modern practice is they don't actually do the whole debate, just... They say, hey, we're going to invoke this, so they don't even bother if they don't have 60 votes. And what's become practice is more and more and more and more things in practice need 60 votes to get out of the Senate. Because the old way this was done is almost every issue required a majority vote, and the senators would honestly, in most cases, actually be voting, is it okay to proceed to a vote? And that was independent of their view on the underlying issue, except in sort of more extreme situations where they used it as a blocking or delaying tactic, which clearly has always been there in the history, just to be clear. But on most things, it was not used that way. On most things, you'd have plenty of senators that planned to vote against a bill still vote to end debate because they were like, okay, let's get on with it. Let's have the vote. If we lose, we lose. If we win, we win. Let's move on. But in recent years, and this has been accelerating. It's accelerated a lot under the current Republican Senate. Not Republican Senate. It's a Democratic Senate, but the Republicans have been in the minority and have been using this. But it actually did expand a lot under the previous when the Democrats were in the minority as well, compared to previous years. But it's just been rapidly accelerating, so that the reality has been almost nothing can happen. And specifically contentious was votes for presidential appointments.
Yes.
And this is judicial appointments. This is also administrative. Typically, it hasn't been used too much on cabinet-level appointees. But on if you go down a level from that, there have been all kinds of appointees that have been blocked this way. And so the Obama administration has record numbers of unfilled positions. Now, some of them are because they've been blocked in the Senate, as we've spoken about, and others, Obama hasn't even bothered nominating anybody. And, of course, the Republicans criticize him for not nominating him, and his answer is, well, I don't think he's explicitly said that, but one argument is, well, why bother? They're going to get blocked anyway. In any case, the Democrats apparently just finally said, you know, enough is enough. We've got all kinds of judicial nominees pending, and I think what put it over the edge was a judge for the D.C. Circuit. They exercised a nuclear option. They basically eliminated the ability to filibuster on most presidential nominees with the exception of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, pretty much it. Yep.
They also, by the way, did not touch the filibuster for legislation. Although one thing is, you know, now that sort of the genie is out of the bottle here, I have no doubt whatsoever that the next time a quote unquote important, Supreme Court nominee or quote unquote important piece of legislation gets blocked by a filibuster, whoever is the party in charge at the time will just nuke the rest of the filibuster.
I'm going to say that the way things have been going is probably about time. I mean, you know, it's pretty tough when you've got like a majority already. And I mean, everything requires a freaking supermajority.
Well,
no.
It's just
one way of freaking get quite a lot of gridlock happening, which is what's been happening for forever. I mean,
when you have one of the parties whose stated goal is essentially gridlock, they don't want the government to do anything. That gives them, even if they're in the minority, they have the power to do that by stopping things. Now, my thought on this is, first of all, I am not opposed to supermajorities in general. I think certain things should require supermajorities. The Constitution specifically only requires the supermajority for ratification of treaties, I believe.
Right.
Maybe a couple other things. Like, does impeachment require a supermajority?
I thought it did. There's an overriding a veto and et cetera.
There are a few things like that. And I think that it's legitimate to require supermajorities for some things. But
for some
the root and of course, like, there's some things that I believe that even if you have a 99.9% majority, they shouldn't be allowed to do. And that's why you have things like the Bill of Rights that say Congress may not do this, Congress may not do that at all. And I think that's perfectly legitimate because you do want to protect minority rights in a variety of ways. But I think for sort of routine business, the phrase is elections have consequences. And I think that that's actually important. And that, yes, I fully realize that, you know, and you know, on some things I sympathize more with the Republicans, on some things more with the Democrats. Lately, as the Republicans have gone kind of crazy, it's far less often that I sympathize with them. You know, the winner should have somewhat broad prerogatives to carry out the mandate they were elected on. And so if that means if you have the majority in the Senate, yes, you should be able to do certain things. If you have the presidency, yes, you should do certain things. If you have the majority in the House, yes, you should be able to do certain things. And so what does that mean in terms of judicial nominees? That means, yes, Obama should be able to nominate the folks that he wants for the judiciary. And if his party is in control of the Senate, they should be able to approve those, absent somebody having a severe reason not to be approved.
Right.
And yes, that absolutely positively does mean that if the next president is Rick Santorum, he should be able to do the same damn thing.
Yes. But, you know, and it's just, and let's face it, most of these nominees, most of them eventually got approved.
Well, here's the thing.
What this caused was a significant amount of gridlock and negotiating and freaking just,
One of the interesting things here, you're right, they got approved, but not only did they get approved, but many of them got approved by more than 60 votes. And where we have the sort of the party holding together to block the vote, but once you decide, okay, let's have the vote, they win.
Oh, yeah, okay. We were okay with them. And I'm like, really? I mean, so we leave benches open. We have,
And of course, all of this is about avoiding changing. There are two sides of this. There's the judicial side and the administrative side. On the judicial side, it's all about avoiding changing the balance of the court from conservative to liberal. Because right now, the court is still today dominated by Reagan appointees. You know, however long it's been. I mean, because judges stay on the bench so damn long.
That's right. Also,
even after they retire, many of them keep hearing cases because they're sort of, there's an over, there are too many cases for all the active judges. And so the retired judges volunteer to take cases sometimes. And so, you know, we still have lots and lots of Reagan judges. And, you know, certainly there have been some judges after that, but the balance is conservative overall in the federal judiciary, and in the Supreme Court, as we know as well, by one-ish vote, depending on the issue. You don't want to, if you're a conservative, you don't want a situation where a Democratic president for 8 years can nominate the people he likes, because that might change that balance. The flip side, and the Republicans have been very disciplined about this, especially during the Obama administration, less so during the Clinton administration, but especially during the Obama administration, they've been letting through very, very few people. And the Democrats didn't do the same thing on the flip side when W was around. They were sort of sticking to the, okay, we don't really like him, but I guess he's okay. He's a judge. He's not incompetent. Here you go.
And so
you get a difference. Now, the Democrats may regret that wish they could block Republicans under the next Republican administration. But this move kind of precludes that. This says, okay, you win the presidency. If you've also got the Senate.
And you have the Senate, then, you know, you should be able
to what you want.
Frickin' put the people through that you want. I mean,
And on the administrative side, it takes a slightly different flavor, in that what's been happening is there have been whole agencies that are sort of somewhat crippled because Obama hasn't been able to nominate a head for the agency or to the committees or whatever it is. And so he's getting by on temporary appointments, recess appointments, acting people from that aren't political appointees, but were just the sort of most senior career person at the agency. And frankly, that last one, there's probably not a huge problem having the career people in charge sometimes instead of the political appointees, but anyway, it's prevented those agencies from acting on the president's agenda fully in many cases, which is of course the reason why they're being blocked. But overall, I think I posted on Twitter. I'm all for eliminate the filibuster entirely. People should be able to vote on things. And if I think up or down vote should be the norm in democracies. And it's not just the filibuster. I think it's also about the leadership's prerogative to keep things from coming to the floor in the first place. I also think that needs to go away at some point, where, you know, any congressperson, Senate or House, should be able to bring up a bill for a vote and have it voted on. And, you know, vote it up, vote it down, whatever, but it should get a vote. And I think any impediment to that is just an unnecessary and counterproductive block on democracy. We've got enough in terms of separation of powers between the House and the Senate and the presidency and the courts. We don't need to also have all kinds of hoops you have to jump through in Congress to even get it voted on.
Nah, I know. Well,
but
it's done.
But it's done. And what I think you're going to see, you're going to see.
And I don't think that the world is going to end.
Well, what you're going to see is you're going to see all of a sudden a bunch of nominees going through that had been blocked. You're going to see the Obama administration actually staffing up the their administrative agencies and filling the vacancies in the courts. You may start to see the balance of power start to change in the court system. The real question on the courts, of course, is when you have a vacancy on one of the conservative slots on the Supreme Court, which may or may not happen during the Obama administration. But if you want to see this go out of control, that's when it's going to happen. If one of the liberal justices retires or dies or whatever, no big whoop, because it won't change the balance of the court. Obama will nominate his person, the Republicans will make some noise, and then eventually let the guy go on the Supreme Court. Where you'll see fireworks is if one of the conservatives retires or dies. And the pattern we've typically seen, and this is both on the liberal and conservative side, is if you're a conservative justice, you won't retire when there's a Democratic president. If you're a liberal justice, you won't retire while there's a Republican president, if you can at all help it. And right. So that has meant the balance for the last couple of decades has been that Democrats get to replace liberal justices, Republicans get to replace conservative justices, and we haven't had a situation in a long time.
We haven't had one die for a long time or anything like that. Or
they've all held out for the president of the right party to be in power.
Yeah.
The first time that doesn't happen, you'll see fireworks. And if you have, and for instance, if you had the current, you know, if one of the conservative justices retired or died right now, this very second, I think the filibuster on Supreme Court nominees disappears that day too. Or as soon as the Republicans say they're going to block somebody, that's it. We're done. We get our nominee. Because that changes the balance of the Supreme Court for decades. And that's a big deal. And I think, you know, to a lesser extent, because of the balance of the court, vice versa, if the next president is a Republican with a Republican Senate. And I think the same thing is true of legislation. Like right now, it doesn't matter because nothing will get through the House anyway. But if you had a situation where you had the same party controlling the presidency and both houses of Congress, but something that party thought was really important was getting blocked by the filibuster, the filibuster for legislation goes away too at that point. I think the dam is broken. I think any of these fig leaves, they sort of left it in place saying, well, we don't have to undo that right now. And the reason they didn't is because there's not any expected controversy in those two areas because it doesn't matter. On legislation, it doesn't matter because nothing will get through the House anyway. On the Supreme Court, well, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. We don't anticipate, right now, we're not anticipating any deaths or retirements. You know, you never know, but right now we're not.
Yeah, exactly. One never knows.
One never knows. I mean, you know, some of those guys are getting up there in age, but they can deal with that when it happens. You know, so there's no need to hit those two to sort of say, oh, well, we're not going all the way. But really, once you've taken this step, you've made it clear that it's possible. And so, of course, it'll happen the next time it's important. Like, you won't necessarily do it off of some random piece of legislation you don't care about that much, but the second something comes up that's important, you will. It's, you know, the filibuster is done.
I think you're right. It's done. I mean, nobody's going to respect it anymore, so I mean, it's just, it, like you said, next time something else happens, it's just going to be, you know, the remnants of it are going to die right along with it.
Now, we've mentioned before as well, though, that there are all kinds of other mechanisms to hold stuff up in the Senate.
Yes, there is a lot.
And so, like, this one mechanism may be gone. The next time there's something important there, they're just going to whip out one of the others. And the one that's most often mentioned is there's so much business that gets done in the Senate by unanimous consent.
Right.
You know, by unanimous consent, let's do this. By unanimous consent, let's do this. And all it takes is one senator. One. Not like the 40 that you needed to get to 60 votes or to block a 60 vote thing, but one senator. All it takes is one senator sitting on the floor, and every time somebody asks for unanimous consent, saying "I object," and everything stops.
Yes.
You know, by permission, I'd like to revise and extend my remarks. No. By permission, I'd like by unanimous consent, I suggest we adjourn for the evening. No. By unanimous consent, I suggest we waive the reading of this 3,000-page bill. No. Read it. You know, etc. So that'll be fun to watch.
That could be quite a lot of fun. You'd love that.
Yeah, it would be fun.
You'd love that. You'd be in the Senate. You'd be like you'd be just saying no all the time just for the hell of it.
Oh, I've always thought if I ever got elected to Congress, I knew I would never be reelected after doing so. But just sit there, and it doesn't even matter what I vote on. Just say no to every unanimous consent agreement.
Right.
And say
no.
And so
fuck no.
No, I wouldn't even necessarily block it all the way. I just say I call for a recorded voice vote on this.
You know, you may get reelected, but let me tell you something. You're not going to have a lot of senators having lunch with you. That's all I'm saying. It's like, they're going to see, like, midterm again? Fuck! I got to go back in and vote?
Yeah, and I would do that for all voice votes, too. I just have a philosophical objection to voice votes. No, record the damn vote. Be on record.
Right.
You know, so, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Fun filibuster stuff. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I use that phrase a lot. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
We keep saying that all the time. We got to come up with something else.
A new catchphrase for me.
It's going to call bullshit on this whole fucking thing at some point.
Yeah. I'll get thinking on those catchphrases. You know, I wish I could come up with one on the spot, but you know, I'll have to think about it. Suggestions are welcome from the audience. Okay, we'll be back. We'll talk about one of the other things after this. Oh, and we took 20 minutes that time.
Damn it.
We'll be back.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classics celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, here we are. I ran a hurricane.
I ran.
Yeah, so, I mean, we talked about this a few weeks that this was happening and people would be pissed about it. So, of course, there's a preliminary agreement and people are pissed about it. The Israeli government is throwing a little hissy fit. All the neocons.
The Israeli government
is
going to throw a hissy fit about anything. That's not so, whatever. They want us to bomb Iran.
Yes.
Iran.
All sorts of people are basically saying the Obama administration is giving up the farm. This is a bad agreement. It's no
not
real
giving
restriction.
Up jack shit, nothing. I mean, it's, you know, it's baby step. It's all it is. You know what? you go and you show some good faith that you're going to do this. We're going to show you a little bit of good faith to do that. We're going to do a little of this, and let's see if we can hold up our word.
Right.
That's basically what it is. That's all it is. Okay. Everything's a bad deal
because on both sides the amount of concessions are fairly minor.
They're fairly minor, but that's the whole point of it, to be honest.
So basically, I should say, although there are some steps, so like on the U.S. side, we're relaxing a few sanctions, just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
On the Iranian side, they've agreed to dilute down any enriched uranium they have to a much lower percentage than they currently have, which means it would take longer to get it from there to weapons grade if they decided to do that at some point. But also the one significant thing here is they've agreed to a much more expansive presence of inspectors. Inspecting more facilities more often than they ever have before.
Right.
And so that is a non-trivial thing. But you're right. Mostly this is all about trust building.
Yes.
Here's some little things. Let's see if we can do this. If this works out okay, then maybe we can go further. And this is to me, this looks like the Iranians basically saying, look, we've been saying this for years that we don't really want a nuclear weapon. We want a peaceful program. We of course, and they won't.
Now, one thing is that they're saying that, but really, I mean, the stuff that they're having to do shows that that's really bullshit.
What it shows is that they've, and this is what I was going to say, they have always worked to keep their options open. So even if they don't want a nuclear weapon right now, they want to have the capability so they could change their mind at any time.
I gotcha.
You know, and so maybe they don't want a bomb. Maybe they don't want to go so far as to do, you know, a test explosion like North Korea did, and they don't want to have a bunch on warheads ready to fire off. But they want to be in a position where if it looks like they're going to get into a shooting war with anybody they care about that's formidable, they could flip a switch and be there quickly if they wanted to be. And we've talked before about, you know, Iran has legitimate strategic reasons for doing so. A variety of their neighbors and adversaries have nukes.
I know. There are a good number of reasons for that. I would think that you probably I would think that at some point the Iranians, if we make more progress, that they were looking for certain more assurances from our end in some way.
Yeah, they may want additional security concerns. And this again goes back to the trust building part of this. This is a relationship building and trust building, and it's the Iranians saying, "Look, we've been saying this for all this time." Even if some of my predecessors didn't really feel strongly about this, this is where we are now. We don't want to weaponize. We have a line in the sand that we believe it is legitimate for us to have a peaceful energy program. Let's figure out a way to make this work that will make you happy and make us happy. And let's take these initial steps, and we'll prove to you that we're trustworthy. And you take some steps to prove to us that you're not just out to get us too, because it actually is a big step on the part of the U.S. to openly and outright do something that Israel is dead set against. You know, it's been a while since we've gone directly against what the Israelis were advocating on a Middle East issue. I see this as nothing but positive. I mean, and if it turns out the Iranians, you know, are
we didn't really like lessen the sanctions that much. We can go back and apply any of the pressure, doing thing or whatever.
We can go ahead and bomb them if we've
got more monitoring on the ground, so we would know what the hell really is going on.
Right. We would have better view of what's going on than we do without the monitoring. And even if the monitor, I mean, people will argue the monitoring isn't all that good and they can do things without being seen by the monitoring. It's still better having it than not having it, in terms of visibility. And I think, you know, a lot of the people who are freaked out by this, you know, they say they're freaked out because we're giving away the store and we're going to let the Iranians keep developing things, but we're taking off the sanctions. You know, frankly, I think what they're really afraid of is that the Iranians will do exactly what they say. This will de-escalate and will normalize relationships with Iran, and they won't be the big boogeyman in the region anymore.
Right.
You know, and I think that, and that obviously changes the balance of power throughout the region. If Iran wasn't the big enemy there, you know, it changes the balance of power with Saudi Arabia. It changes the balance of power with Israel. It has huge impacts for the rest of the region if this, like, works out in the best possible way. Now, it may not work out in the best possible way, but everybody who is invested in the current balance of power is, of course, scared of the change. And I think that's what you see a lot of here, really. It's not, I don't know. There probably is a lot of honest fear of Iran, too. But, you know, honestly, I don't see it. I mean, I know that that regime in the past, going back to the 70s, has done some things that we are not particularly happy with, and has not been known for, you know, being the best friend of America, to say the absolute least. But, you know, they're not irrational either. They're not total crazies. They're not. You can't see. Okay, they get a nuke. What are they really gonna do?
They're gonna plant it under your house in your basement.
Yeah, and I saw there was one guy quoted that says, you know, if a suitcase nuke blows up New York or Madrid sometime in the next few years, it's because of this. Really?
I think this is the last reason why that would happen. There's so many other sources. So many other sources of far more sophisticated devices than even the first device that Iranians can make. Okay? That's just ridiculous. It's just, you know, but I don't know. You know, it just seems like, I think, was it you or somebody that tweeted, like, recently that they were talking about that the current fair and balanced view of, like, putting stuff in the news is putting which view was it, like, the sane view, you know, like, you know, reality, and then you gotta grabbing some off the wall idiot, you know, in order to counter it. Not that they're stupid. It's just like, oh, this is the facts, and then oh, let's just put some moron that talks about creationism on, you know, because yeah, to count. Really, is this the only shit that we've got? I don't know.
I retweeted that. Here it is. I retweeted it on the 25th. So on Monday. Sunday evening, U.S. time, I retweeted the account Green Footballs, which is Charles Johnson's website, Little Green Footballs. Increasingly these days, when the media says they're airing both sides, they mean the sane side and the batshit crazy side.
Exactly. That's all it is. I mean, the other people are just fucking batshit crazy. These people are not putting in on some kind of rational argument. Listen, today, you know, talking about, you know, I know this is completely off the subject, but I was at the gym working out, and Fox News is trying to drum up people that are affected by the healthcare change. What they were bitching about was that apparently there are massive surcharges if you're a smoker. Okay?
Okay.
And I guess they're saying you should be able to fucking smoke and get cheap healthcare. And I'm like, really? Really? Are you fucking putting this on TV right now? Because you just want to say whatever's the opposite? I'm like, wait a minute. It's a free market method of, like, actually trying to deter people from smoking. And Fox News right now is trying to put this as...
Well,
socialism,
and more to the point on insurance. I mean, you know, and Obamacare actually restricts you from doing some of this, but it's basically knowing, given what you know about the person, how risky are they? How much costs are likely to be incurred? And guess what? If you're a smoker, there are a lot more costs that are likely to be incurred.
Damn straight. Now, so stop fucking smoking, asshole. I mean, that's the only point.
Now, you could argue that this is sort of a pre-existing condition, and why is it different?
Yeah, but you're not getting denied coverage is the point.
You're not getting denied, but like I believe
but you can't get
but you can't charge people a lot more because they already have cancer either.
Right. But there's a difference between an activity and a disease.
Well, let me ask you this: would you feel the same way if the surcharge was on caffeine drinkers or on people who ate foods with lots of sugar?
But there's no proven relationship that directly. I mean, you can't. There is far more direct empirical evidence that you can take about a smoker and their health effects.
Okay, wait. Take out the caffeine. Take out the caffeine. Let's talk sugar, because there is plenty of empirical relationship on the negative effects of sugar on health.
It's not as bad as.
Actually, it's arguably worse.
Some people argue worse. I say no. Listen, I'll tell you this. If it's insurance, I'm usually in the camp of like that the surcharges for certain activities should be. I'm okay with like levying some kind of surcharge, but not that great.
But the thing is,
drawing where the hell do you draw the lines? I mean, listen, I mean, it's all really based on their models, you know.
Well, you know hey, what you I know what the real difference.
Take all the data.
The real difference here at this point is that smokers are down in the United States to what, under 20%, under 10%, somewhere around that ballpark.
Somewhere under 20%. I mean, it's really collapsed.
You know,
whereas everybody fucking drinks alcohol and fucking.
Everybody drinks alcohol. Well, not everybody, but I don't. But everybody, almost everybody in the United States has more sugar than is healthy for you. And so you can't do a surcharge because it's everybody. Now, maybe you could give a discount for people who avoid it, but.
I don't touch the fucking stuff. I don't know.
You don't touch sugar?
Not particularly. I don't really eat. I mean, I don't eat.
Well, remember, carbs are sugar too.
Okay, you're gonna go with. Well, I'm sorry, no. You want to now go and like say, well, yeah. Well, by the way, we turn everything into sugar in our system. For
yeah,
that,
yeah. So. Okay, but like, yeah.
Yeah.
Fine. Like, but in general, like, It's vastly, vastly overused in the American diet, and things you don't even think have it actually have it in it if you look in the ingredients. Now, I'm not sitting here as someone who doesn't eat sugar. I eat tons of this stuff every day. So
yeah, but but what I mean is, like, for example, I never put sugar in my coffee or eat like sugar drinks or like other stuff and whatever. That's what I mean. But
ever
anyway,
have a cake? Ever have a cookie?
Very rarely. Not very common. No cookies in the house.
Sugar on cereal?
No.
Yeah. You know, most cereals have sugar in them, even if you don't add them.
Even the ones you think don't. Don't eat cereal.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, if you go through the list, you're going to find yourself like my wife.
You're just a saint. You're just a saint.
I'm not saying I'm a saint. Wait. No, but I'm saying the sugar part. Not sugar.
Anyway, the point is you could do a far more detailed investigation and, you know, of list all of your habits, list all of your health history, and adjust your rates accordingly. Obama, in general, these plans are not structured that way. So it is interesting that they have the smoking exception. So I will grant them that. It's interesting that they put the exception there. It is justified by the actuarial numbers, but so would be all kinds of other things. So it's interesting that they have it for that, but not for everything else.
Okay. Well, now that we've gotten so far off topic, we could.
I was going to say one more thing about Iran. The other interesting thing that came out is that prior, you know, publicly, these negotiations started after the visit at the UN, and Obama made a phone call to the new president of Iran, blah, blah, blah. As it turns out, there were secret negotiations going on for months before that.
I was sure of that.
So it's interesting here, and I haven't read the details of all of it, but apparently there was quite a lot of back channel secret diplomacy going on for quite a while here leading up to this. And again, I'm all for it. Great. We talked a few weeks ago about if Obama actually pulls this off, this will be one of the biggest accomplishments of his presidency.
That's right.
And maybe the last few presidencies.
Yes, it would be.
Because one of the things that, you know, was brought up in some of the discussion about this, and why one of the reasons, you know, Netanyahu and such is upset, is if you take Iran off the table as the boogeyman, maybe they finally actually have to do pay attention to the Palestinians.
Well, apparently I heard that somehow they got coaxed into sitting back at the table. Now, that doesn't mean anything that they're going to negotiate it anything, but still.
You mean the Israelis and Palestinians?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I'll believe something there when it...
Right, you know, right.
I won't even believe it when it happens, to be honest.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Okay, back. So, we'll take another break. We'll be back and talk briefly about the hurricane. I don't know how much there is to say, but you got some stuff. We'll be back after this. Oh, and we went 17 minutes.
Damn.
Here we go. And we're back.
Okay, so
there was a really bad hurricane in the Philippines.
Well, the thing is that I was reading an article this weekend about it, and I think that they had the death toll up to over 5,000, which is quite substantial. And for any hurricane, I'm trying to remember any hurricane that we've had here in the Caribbean, in the Atlantic coast that had such death toll. I can't remember. I think if you add up the last 10, 15, 20 hurricanes we've got hit, you don't get to that number in terms of deaths. There was a thing that the news today that we were talking about, that a lot of the people, especially in the town that got hit the hardest by the storm surge, it seems like a lot of the people in Manila, the weather whatever department was issuing all these warnings, and so was the U.S. Counterpart in Hawaii. And they kept telling everybody, hey, you got to watch out for this storm surge. You may have the worst storm surge ever. And everybody was like, what the fuck is a storm surge? Nobody understood that the whole storm surge thing meant a massive, you know, basically, what there was a complaint. They should have said it's like a fucking tsunami, and then everybody would have moved. Everybody thought that it wasn't like that. Everybody just thought it was going to be a wind and rain event. And when a lot of places, what wound up happening is that maybe roofs started getting peeled off, and whatever. People are starting to go, oh, we're going to the basement, we move down, and all of a sudden they're going down to the first floor, realizing, holy shit, the water's coming back up. We got to go back up. Oh, wait, the roof's gone. Wait, it was just really bad, because it just seemed like, unfortunately, there's a lot of people that got hurt or died simply because, unfortunately, people just didn't understand what the heck it meant that was really coming into hurricane, unfortunately.
So just to be complete, I looked up Atlantic hurricane deaths. The last Atlantic hurricane to kill more than 5,000 people was Hurricane Mitch in 1998.
In 98? So I figured the last 10, 15 hurricanes. So
the Mitch, 1998.
Because that's the one that hit on Honduras, I think it was.
Yeah, it hit Honduras and Nicaragua hardest. And it also affected a little bit the Yucatan and South Florida, but mostly Honduras and Nicaragua.
Yeah, but I what I'm saying, yeah, and I remember that. That was really horrible. I forgot about it, Mitch. But if you take this, that was like
about 11,000 people.
But if you take like, you probably take almost every Atlantic hurricane from that day on to here, and you had the death toll. Even like it wouldn't. I mean, geez, it's just really, you know, and it was just horrible. I mean, I heard the stories about people where a guy would. Decided, oh, I'm sending my family to a shelter, a place, because I want them to be safe, but I want to protect our home. And this one guy that died, I mean, it was just, you know what, listen, they keep getting hit by flying coconuts. I mean, it freaking, like, shatter his leg, hit him, kill him. I mean, there was just nothing to protect. I mean, the houses were made, what the material they were made, there's no way they were going to stand that hurricane, unfortunately. There's just no way. You didn't stand a chance of defending anything, and unfortunately, they stood out there as this place starts falling apart, and then the breach just hits them, and then you had this massive tsunami hit at the same time. It's just horrible, you know, the way this place got hit. That's really, I feel terrible for those guys, and having to go through. I mean, it's just sometimes you realize, just looking at some of the pictures the other day, I mean, it's like, you know, we live in. I mean, the society we live in versus society that a lot of people in this world live in, we have no connection one or another. These people really lived in very poor, very, you know, ramshackle homes that just had no chance of standing up to that storm. And, you know, it's just terrible to see how many people either died or, like, right now just have absolutely nothing. I mean, it's everything.
Yeah, and of course, even it's been a while since the hurricane hit, but these counts are going to continue to go up for a while.
Yeah, because there's still quite a lot of people missing. I think they said today that they had the count of missing of about a couple of thousand, like right now, still missing. And those are probably going to,
Yeah, most of them are probably dead.
Yeah, unfortunately. So yeah, I just figured to take a moment to mention it. It's just, I mean, it's just, you know, how sometimes just the flow of information, just people, you know, yeah, I mean, there was these warnings and people didn't really understand what the hell the warning meant. Just didn't.
Yeah, well, and it just emphasizes the importance of, you know, on all of these kinds of things, the reason why the death tolls on hurricanes has gone down over the years has not been because, you know, hurricanes aren't as bad or anything like that. It's lots more advanced notice and much better communication to get people the hell out of the way and evacuated.
Absolutely.
And the places where they have that infrastructure put in place and have that education put in place that says, hey, if you get this kind of warning, get the hell out. And where you have some place for those people to go and you have the infrastructure for them to get out and you have the ability to transport them quickly, where that's in place, you know, it's very rare to have huge numbers of deaths anymore. I mean, you unfortunately tend to still have some because there are always some people who stay behind despite the warnings. Right. But for the most part, you minimize this. But in places where that infrastructure isn't there and the warnings don't get out and whatever, you still have the possibility for massive damage. And not just the warnings don't get out. You have to have all that supporting infrastructure too, in order to effectively evacuate in the first place. And so you see this, the one other thing I'd mention about this hurricane, for those of you who didn't see, there was a viral thing going around that initially was actually put out by the Red Cross that showed, you know, what this hurricane would look like if it was over the United States. And it showed a picture of the hurricane over the continental United States, basically covering the entire country.
Yeah.
And then a few hours later, a number of people pointed out, no,
it wasn't that big.
It's not that big. And then the Red Cross had to put out an apology and retract the image.
Yeah, because that was not correct. I mean, it was a big hurricane.
It turned out what had happened was whoever put that image together had simply copy and pasted one picture of the hurricane onto a map of the United States without correcting for scale.
Yeah, that's not very accurate.
And so Yeah, it was a big hurricane, but it wasn't the size of the continental United States.
No. But it was quite big, though. If it's understood, it would have covered quite a multiple states on the eastern seaboard at once. It would have really been quite impactful. Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah. But anyway, all right. So that was pretty much it that I had about the hurricane. So
since you had that, I'll just mention a tweet that just went across my timeline. Mm-hmm. This is from one of the local stations here in Seattle. It's at Cairo 7 Seattle. Police say the man hit in the face by a light rail train this evening in South Seattle was inebriated and high.
What? Good God. Well, there you go.
So if you're inebriated and high, yep, don't stick your face in front of a train.
That would really be good advice, I would say. Yeah. Sounds like a plan to me.
I mean, you probably shouldn't do it even if you were sober, but, you know, if you're inebriated and high, keep away from the trains.
Good plan. Solid plan. I like it.
Anyway, anything else, Yvonne, to wrap up?
No, we're done. We're out.
Hey, and that segment was only 9 minutes.
So there we go. There we go. Have it. We kept it under an hour.
For those who aren't keeping up here, we're making fun of the fact that theoretically our goal is 15-minute segments per show. And yeah,
We're all over the place. I mean,
so thanks, everybody, for listening. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com or contact me on Twitter. I'm at abelsmay, and Yvonne is at imbo. We'd love to hear from you guys with questions, comments, suggestions, telling us we're stupid, whatever. We like to engage in that debate, so send stuff our way. Let's see. Review us on iTunes. Tell your friends about us. Share us on social media. All that stuff that no one ever does. I feel so sad and rejected.
No.
I know. Yeah. Anyway, enjoy your week, everybody, and we'll see you again next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.